The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
The automotive sector currently contributes 40 billion ringgit, or around 4% of Malaysia's GDP. It is an important contributor to the manufacturing industry, with 700,000 workers and more than 700 vendors in the ecosystem. The Malaysia Automotive Institute is an agency under the Ministry of International Trade and Industry and serves as a peak body for the nation's automotive industry. Good morning, I'm Brian Fernandez, and our guest today on The Breakfast Grill is Dato' Madani Sahari, CEO of the Malaysia Automotive Institute. Welcome to The Breakfast Grill, Dato'.
Thank you.
Dato', can you give us an overview of Malaysia Automotive Institute's mandate from MITI?
All right, thank you, Brian. Firstly, the MAI, established in the year 2010, is an outcome from the Industrial Master Plan 3, way back in 2006. Now, when MITI set up the MAI, there are several mandates. Firstly, to act as a think tank to the government, advising the government about the overall direction, what should be the direction of the auto industry. And with that, it comes with formulation of policy. And one of the policies that we had formulated was the National Automotive Policy, coming into the third edition and launched in the year 2014. Now, apart from all that, you know, policies are somewhat high. We need to bring measures in the policy to an implementable level. So for that reason, MAI is in charge of developing roadmaps. In the NAP, there are six roadmaps, and with the roadmaps, there are strategic activities. All these activities are meant to fill in the void, to enhance the competitiveness of the ecosystem within the auto industry. The last mandate would be to act as an intermediary between stakeholders, the automotive stakeholders, with the government. So in general, there are four big mandates that MAI is undertaking from the start of its establishment.
So, Dato', talking about your roadmaps, you've been CEO since 2010. What have been your key tangible achievements in the last 7 years?
You know, when we formulate the National Auto Policy 2014, the government then was asking what should be the direction of the auto industry. You know, before the latest addition to the NAP 2014, there were two policies, two NAPs, the NAP 2006 and the NAP 2009. And these two NAPs, they were achievements, definitely. But Malaysia during that time, we were still, I would say, did not liberalise fully the automotive industry. We had liberalised then, the vendor community, but we haven't liberalised the OEMs, meaning the car manufacturers. So looking into what is going on, what has been going on in the region, in Thailand, Indonesia, and other countries, and in the world globally, you know, we were asked to review, relook into the policy and see how best Malaysia should reposition ourselves in that regard. So 2014, finally, government decided to liberalise the automotive industry, meaning we now allow new manufacturers to come to Malaysia and they will be granted a license, a manufacturing license, provided that they produce in Malaysia vehicles that we call energy-efficient vehicles, EEVs. So from then until today, from 2014, the policy was launched in January 2014. Until today, we have accomplished quite a number of deliverables. Number one would be in terms of in terms of the investment. The auto industry, from 2014 until 2018, we have received a committed investment worth of 14.2 billion. Until December 2016, 6.9 billion of the 14.2 billion had been realized, meaning had been completed in terms of its investment. The other important factor would be exports. Parts and components exports have risen tremendously from a mere 5 billion in the year 2013-14 to 11.2 billion last year in 2016. And this year, we are targeting an export of 12 billion of parts and components. Now, let's talk about cars because, you know, Malaysia, we have our own national cars. Now, truly enough, you know, exports of cars have not been great. Before the NAP 2014, Proton basically, in general, was the only organization that that was exporting vehicles, CBUs, and they exported around 20 over 1,000 units a year, while the other OEMs, the other vehicle manufacturers, did not export a lot before the policy 2014. And then we see a switch from the other OEMs other than Proton, Perodua, Volvo, Mazda, Subaru, even the latest BMW, they are switching now from only selling their cars in Malaysia to exporting their cars into the ASEAN region. Last year, we recorded a vehicle exports of 33,438 units. And this 33,000 over of cars exported from all these OEMs, apart from Proton, because we understand Proton has yet to restart the export program, and hopefully they will do that very soon. So the other OEMs that used not to be in the export business, they are now have started to be in the export business. And commitment coming from these OEMs until 2020, we've got the figure, which is about 125,000 units have been committed in their business plan to be exported by the year 2020. So I think a lot of these tangible achievements we have met. The industry has met all these achievable all these achievements. The other aspect is employment, which is of great importance to the people. So from 2014 to 2017, a total of 87,382 jobs have been created in the automotive industry alone. So a big figure. We are targeting a total of 180,000 new jobs to be created by the year 2020. So those are among the big numbers that I can remember offhand. You know, to answer what have been achieved after the policy 2014 been announced until today.
The other thing in 2014, which you mentioned when you were interviewed on the Breakfast Grill, is that you were looking at the industry contributing 10% of GDP, or around 150 billion, as well as 1.3 million in annual vehicle production. So really big, ambitious goals. So what's the 2017 report card looking like? Are we on track to achieve those goals?
Yeah, well, in terms of exports, exports commitment, yeah, until 2020, there's still a lack of another, if I'm not mistaken, another 40,000 units of commitment in order to achieve the 1.3 million of production, because we are targeting a production of 1.3 million, including export, as part of the 1.3 million. So we are still working with the OEMs, and also hopefully Proton with its new partner will also restart their export program in a big way into the ASEAN region. So insofar as 2017 is concerned, you know, there's been a reduction in total sales in Malaysia in 2016. Dipped below 600,000 units. So in 2017, as at October, there is a slight improvement in terms of total sales, but really a small increase in October compared to October, the same period last year. So this year, at best, probably, you know, we can do another 590,000, you know, but at best, really, if November and December, the sales really pick up, you know, 590, 595, you know, it really depends on what's going to happen in the next 2 months. So really for Malaysia, domestic sales is not the target. We should be targeting now going into exports, exports of cars, including exports of parts and components. So we see that OEMs, as I said, they are switching now their business plan from only looking at Malaysia from a domestic standpoint, and now they're switching their business plan from that to also include exports of their vehicles in the region.
So, Dato, let's look at two pillars of your existence, literally, which is human capital development within the automotive space, as well as industry linkages. Now, let's look at it from three levels. One, from a vocational education perspective, where at the workshop level, how you are developing that or have been developing that. At a production R&D level, which is a parts manufacturing or manufacturer level, something that you mentioned earlier. And also at an innovation level, at an innovation R&D level. What have you done to really address these issues to help Malaysia move up the value chain?
Right. Good questions, Brian, really. From a technical, I should say TVET standpoint, we are very aggressive in pursuing TVET under a program that is called as the Industrial Professional Certification Program, or IPC. This program is meant for SPM leavers, those whom cannot enter tertiary education and they can't also enter the training institution. So basically, you know, they are SPM leavers and they don't pursue their studies. So what we do is we have this IPC, which is a 6 months program comprising 1 month of theoretical classroom training and 5 months on-the-job training. So until today, we have done close to 23,000 of these SPM leavers that have been trained, and now they are all working in the auto industry, especially in the vendor community, and they are actually replacing the foreign workers in the automotive industry. Now, what's interesting about this TVET is these 23,000 SPM leavers, they have been trained within the three areas of manufacturing. One is the production. Second, the quality aspect of their processes. And thirdly, is the maintenance aspect of the equipment and machineries that they are handling. So it's really 3-in-1, meaning they are able to replace a foreign worker that normally will do one job by worker. So they can replace 3-in-1.
So how about then R&D, really? How have you developed linkages between the universities and industry?
Very interesting. You know, that one I need to really start from the Industry 4.0. It's the thing moving forward now. So MAI, we have started...
Dato', maybe what we shall do is we will talk about Industry 4.0 in detail. But say from the up to this point, because Industry 4.0 is moving forward, What have been achieved up to this point in terms of industry linkages and also R&D?
Yeah. In terms of R&D, what we have developed is, you know, what we call simultaneous engineering, meaning OEM, car manufacturers in Malaysia, when they design a model, they need the vendors, especially the tier one vendors, to assist them. To assist them, meaning in terms of designing their products and designing their process of each of the product. So what MAI, the government through MAI, has provided is a facility, a platform that we call DEP, Design Engineering and Prototyping, DEP. DEP is a platform that is a shared platform being used by the vendors to develop their processes and their products in line with the requirements of a new model that an OEM plans to or intends to develop and produce. So far, we have done DEP 1 way back in 2013. We extended that DEP to DEP 2 in 2015. And it is from DEP 1 going into DEP 2. And finally, now, we have MAI Design Center in Rawang that is equipped with all the necessary research development, even virtual manufacturing and painting facility, and even a 3D prototyping equipment, you know, that are used by the vendors to develop their products and their processes and to be in line to do that engineering, what we call as simultaneous engineering together with the OEM. Now, at Rawang, it is my design center. There are 120 vendors that are working there now to come up with a new model of a customer. Actually, now they are doing it. They are doing it with Perodua. Perodua is using that design center to come up with new models in the future, and they are doing it with 120 of their tier one vendors.
I'm Brian Fernandez, and I'm speaking to Dato' Madani Sahari, CEO of the Malaysia Automotive Institute. After this, Dato' Madani will tell us about how Malaysia is moving forward to take advantage of opportunities with the Industry 4.0 initiative. Stay with us on BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning, we are with Dato' Madani Sahari, CEO of Malaysia Automotive Institute. Dato', Industry 4.0 is the current buzzword, and you've just launched this for the automotive sector. Tell us more about these industry initiatives and what you're doing to make Malaysia move up the value chain.
Brian, in May 2016, we have launched the Industry 4.0 by initiating a center that we call the MITS, which stands for the My Intelligent Technology System. What we have in MITS, number one, is a facility that will provide a high-performance computing server. It has more than 200 cores worth of capacity. By the way, it's now being fully used by the industry players. So it's a supercomputer that does not only... It's not a server per se. It's a server that does computing, that does analytics, calculation and analytics. So this is really the core of Industry 4.0, I would say, for a start, because Industry 4.0... it evolves around data management and with connectivity that allows data to be transferred into the server or into the computer or into the supercomputer. So we have that way back in May 2016. So that's something that we have got already.
Now, and what sort of customers are using this at this point of time?
Mainly OEMs, Proton, Perodua, many of the vendors and even some of the universities that are dealing with automotive-related development. So they are using this facility. The other one, an important component that we have also started is what we call the Manufacturing Execution System, MES. Now, this is actually a system that allows data transfer within the processes. Now, imagine a car processes, building a car from process 1 to the process number 100. So from process 1 to process 2 to process 3 and etc., there are input and output. So Industry 4.0 actually allows for this input and output to be captured and then to be directly connected to the supercomputer, analyzed, and then the management or the operation can be in control, meaning a real-time control operation management system. Yeah. So we are introducing this MES, Manufacturing Execution System. So far, there are 10 vendors, 12 vendors that are already starting to adopt using the Manufacturing Execution System. On top of all that, at the design level, early on I was talking about manufacturing, meaning making manufacturing processes within a statistical reliability. Now let's talk about at the upper stream, which is the design aspect of it. So earlier on, we talked about design, engineering and prototyping. We are already at DEP2, and then now we have the MAI Design Center. Now, we have equipped now that center with simulation, meaning with design and also with simulation to a level that development can be done really virtually without having to do a physical prototype until the last milestone where a physical mock-up need to be developed. But before that, all will be done in a simulation fashion, in a virtual fashion. So part of that now are already being offered to OEMs and the vendor community. And there's also the element of additive manufacturing. So we have got a 3D printer that can do up to 2 meters high of a component, so that's being also provided to OEMs and vendors to use.
Dato, one of the things that I noticed from looking at your documents and your website and so forth, actually it's a glaring omission. There are no documents about certain key areas such as human factors and ergonomics, telematics, and internet and mobile stuff related to the auto industry. Why is that? That seems to be a glaring omission.
Well, it's not an omission. It is part of our initiative now from 2017. Now, when we set up the MITS in 2016, that is really a fundamental foundation for us to start the Industry 4.0. Now, recently, we have starting another initiative which got to do with telematics, got to do with data connectivity and so on. And that's an initiative that we call My Dots. We have yet to launch this initiative, but it is an initiative that precisely will deal with the areas that you have just mentioned. And on top of this, in the budget, in the recent budget announced by the Prime Minister, so we have been allocated, actually,
How much is that?
We have been allocated some funds, details into the funding, really, yeah. But there are allocations already provided for us to enhance further this Industry 4.0 under this MyDot initiative. On top of that, to include now the final phase of our Industry 4.0, which is the augmented reality. So this is really the ultimate ecosystem to get ready our automotive stakeholders towards globalization.
Another final question. I've got lots of questions to ask you, but we're running out of time. Vehicle end-of-life policy. That's been on and off the policy agenda for a number of years. Malaysia has 93% car ownership. It's the third in the world. What is the current thinking now from the government's policy standpoint in terms of this area?
Okay, Brian, firstly, I hope we have time, but quickly I have to correct you on that 93%. I'm not so sure how this is being calculated, but saturation level is being calculated by the number of cars per 1,000 of population. So in Malaysia, we are at 363 cars per 1,000 population. Now, in developed countries, South Korea, US, they are all above 600. Cars per 1,000 of population. Truly enough, in ASEAN countries like Indonesia and Thailand, they are way below 100 cars below 1,000. Yeah, so yeah, we are quite high in relation to Indonesia, Thailand, and etc. We are at 363 cars per 1,000. So it's not a question of saturation or where we are. It's really a question of ELV, end of life vehicle. It's really a question of about, you know, cars that are non roadworthy, whether we should allow them to be still driven on the road. Now, the NEP 2014 actually has put measures on this, which is on a voluntary basis. Why it is on a voluntary basis? Because we need to have proper infrastructure before end-of-life vehicle can be implemented. Okay, so things, for example, recycling, the fact that having authorized treatment facilities, all these need to be provided, need to be made available, as well as PVI, private vehicle inspections. All the centres have got to be provided before we can even talk or think about end-of-life vehicle. Now, all of this, after now 3 years, the NAP are being implemented. The NAP is being implemented. So all of this preparation are work in progress still, So ELV is a work in progress, and it is something that we see as a way to assist Malaysians to own cars which are safer, of better technology, and also at a competitive pricing. See, competitive pricing is another element before ELV can be implemented. Imagine if we do ELV with car prices which are still soaring, it's impossible, you know?
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Car prices must be competitive. So we have seen a reduction in car prices, but we need to see a bit more of competition so that car prices can even be more competitive. So in countries like Japan and Germany, where ELV are mandatory, you know, so we see all this infrastructure being put in place, you know, testing, recycling, remanufacturing, authorized treatment facility, with also the market forces that come into play to determine the car prices, as well as the prices of second-hand cars. So all these have got to be put in place into a good perspective, into a good equilibrium before the ELV can be implemented.
Dato, fascinating. It was a pleasure having you on The Breakfast Grill. That was Dato Madani Sahari, CEO of the Malaysian Automotive Institute. And you've been listening to BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile, where data hearts you.